Here's our series on aging in Portland. Retired or rewired? What it's like getting old in a youth-centered city. Are you up for that challenge? We'll bring you lots of views, but you'll have to answer this question for yourself. Is Portland a good place in which to grow old? This is the eighth in KBOO's series on what it's like to age in Portland. We call it Retired or Rewired. The subject today is legal issues. We'll be talking with Kateri Walsh of the Oregon State Bar Association on the new edition of the Bar's Legal Guide for Older Adults. This document is available free online, and it provides guidance on legal issues associated with almost every challenge we face as we age, from financial arrangements to housing to managing family relationships, and advice to families when there's a death in the family.
Hi, Tom. My name is Kateri Walsh, and my title is Public Relations Manager, and I handle a lot of public education and public outreach for the Oregon State Bar.
I understand that the Bar has recently published a book for older people on legal issues and things they need to know.
That is right.
What's the title, and where is it available?
So the book is called Legal Issues for Older Adults, and it's available in a variety of ways. The best and most convenient for people, they can download it. We've made it available for free for download on our website at www.osbar.org. And it's right there on the front page, and people can download it and print it for free if they are interested. If they would like a print copy, we are making that available through our order desk, so that they can also order that online on the website, or they can call to order it, and that number is 503-431-6413. And that is we're only going to charge the cost of printing it, so that's available for purchase for $10 at that phone number. And it is also available in 5 languages, so it's available right now in Spanish, Chinese, Russian, Vietnamese, and English.
Wow. Well, this just came out, so it's pretty up to date.
It is quite up to date, yes. I mean, I think a lot of people think of the Oregon State Bar rightfully as the agency that regulates the practice of law in Oregon. So we are responsible for licensing Oregon lawyers and disciplining Oregon lawyers. But we also have a very significant mission that directs us to do public education and public outreach to help people both understand and access the legal system. So a tremendous amount of work goes into trying to get all the resources available to Oregonians that they may need to understand what is a very complicated legal system.
Why did the Bar Association think that this kind of book was necessary right now?
We've published the book for quite a few years. We try to publish it about every 4 or 5 years. We know from experience that legal issues, any legal issue, can be quite mystifying to the best of us, frankly. But as people age, those legal issues can both multiply and converge one on top of another, which can really make the entire system quite overwhelming. So we get a lot of calls through our lawyer referral service indicating that people are kind of confused and there's an increase in need for legal services as people age. So it's been long understood that this demographic, as we get older, that's a demographic that we really want to make sure that we are reaching out to make sure that they have access to good, solid information that is easily accessible. So that's the thinking behind the book, and we tend to publish it roughly every 4 to 5 years.
Give us an idea of what it contains. What subjects does it cover?
It's organized to be as accessible as possible to laypersons. So it's got several different chapters. One covers income sources for seniors. So as you know, this is one of the reasons that legal issues tend to multiply as we age, because our income sources change dramatically. So we cover access to income through Social Security, through veterans' disability benefits, through other disability benefits, through SSI. railroad retirement annuities and other access to different retirement income. So it's so it has a whole chapter covering income sources for seniors, how to access them, and how to make sure that you're taking full advantage of them. Another big one is medical matters for seniors. So, of course, as people retire, they are often losing their employment-based health insurance. So we have a chapter that covers Medicare, Medicaid, what can you do when you have a Medicare or Medicaid denial, getting long-term care, the Oregon Health Plan, HIPAA, and then some of the decisions that people need to make legally towards end of life, such as setting up healthcare decisions with your physicians, making sure your family understands all of those health decisions. So that's a whole other chapter, is all of these different things you need to think about in terms of medical matters.
By the way, do you know if you cover POLST, the physician's orders for life-sustaining treatment?
We certainly do, and that's a critically important topic and one that it's really important that seniors begin to understand and talk about with their family as they age. So
great.
Yes, we have that is included in that medical chapter.
We had Dr. Susan Toll on this program here.
After medical, we have housing. So there's a whole chapter on what if you want to stay in your home, what systems and legal issues can you put in place to assure that you can stay in your home as long as you want. Property taxes, tax exemption, what are your rights? What are your fair housing rights as an aging person to make sure that you are exercising full rights about where you want to live and how you want to live? And then it talks about things like residential care, dementia care, skilled nursing facilities.
Wait a minute, this is under housing?
This is all under housing. So what you can expect in housing options for seniors, what are your rights as a resident in a skilled nursing facility? And what should you do if you think that you have a problem or that you have been mistreated in a skilled nursing facility? So that's another whole chapter, is all the different rights and elements that you have to think about as you consider your housing option or housing option for your aging loved one.
Do you cover reverse equity mortgages in this sixth section?
I believe that we do in housing. I'd have to look at that to be sure, but I believe that we do have some materials on that. And what we don't have, we also have some other information on our website, which I'll talk to you about that maybe when we finish going over some of the chapters for the book.
All right, go ahead.
So we also have managing your money as you age. So we talk about bank accounts and conservatorships, guardianships, powers of attorney, and all those different mechanisms you need to put in place to make sure that your money is well handled as you age. And somewhat similarly, on a related note, but under a separate chapter, we have estate planning. So planning what to do for when you will pass away. So we have making sure that your will is in order, setting yourself up for probate for your family, and there's some alternatives to wills that you can consider, as well as estate taxes and just kind of general advice about setting up your estate to be well handled after you pass away.
Great.
And then we have when someone does die. So preparing both yourself and your family member for what's going to happen in those days, weeks, months after there is a death in the family. There is some advice that can make that go more smoothly and ease the burden on family members after that happens. And then, you know, a critically important element of this is managing those family and relationship issues as you age, because these can be difficult times on a family as they have an aging family member who may be facing dementia, maybe facing financial crises. What kinds of, there can even sometimes be an increase in violence as people kind of slip into dementia. So how to handle that and how to look for signs of elder abuse. So there's all kinds of interesting family dynamics that begin to happen as we have an aging family member. So there's a chapter on giving some basic guidance on how to manage that.
Do you tell us what to do with our Facebook page after we die?
That is an excellent question. I'm not sure that is covered, but I'll make a note of that because it may be something that we can add and talk about.
Okay. That's for another edition, perhaps. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And the nice thing about, you know, traditionally this book has always been published in print format and people called and ordered it. The nice thing about our modern era is, although the print book that we have now has been ordered and is done, the online version, I think we do anticipate updating it somewhat more often. So as the law changes or different issues occur to us that we may be able to add, we can kind of fix that on the fly more than we used to be able to. So that's another benefit of ordering the book, downloading the book directly from online. It's more likely to be kept up and kept a little bit more current, and we may be able to add some things that are valuable. Covered all the substantive chapters, and then there is finally just a chapter on resources, so other places, other agencies, and other organizations to go to for guidance on these related issues.
And as just to be sure I understand this correctly, this book is free online. Is that right?
It is free online. We did it in partnership with the Department of Human Services for Oregon. And again, a key part of our mission is really trying to be assertive in pushing out good legal information for Oregonians. So we provide this as a public service to Oregonians for free online for download and printing. And then even if you do need to order a print copy, because this demographic in particular really likes to have their print books, that is available just for $10, which just covers the cost of our printing and shipping.
And is it already on the market, or I think this is happening right now, is that right?
It is happening right now. Anybody can find it. It's the first thing you will see if you go to our website at www.osbar.org.
So we would order it from your website, not from Amazon.com or Powell's?
Nope. You order it from our website, and that's one of the ways we're able to assure that it is available for free.
I really like the organization. You know, I thought it was organized without, just in my imagination, into wills and end-of-life documentation and bequeathment, stuff like that. Instead, you've organized it around subjects that we think of in body, like housing, finance, preparation for death, family issues, stuff like that. I like that.
You know, we've done a lot of research on actually how the public thinks about legal issues rather than how lawyers think about legal issues, and we've really tried to keep this focused on the most user-friendly experience for those who will be relying on the book. The other interesting thing is we also have a lawyer referral service where people can call and find access to a lawyer with specialized expertise in whatever legal issue they may be facing. And that lawyer referral service is a wealth of demographic information for us because we can really track trends and issues that are happening in Oregon based on the kinds of calls and what we are hearing from people who call seeking legal help. And I think that gives us, I think the organization of the book is partly informed by what we learn from speaking to hundreds of Oregon citizens every week who are facing some kind of legal challenge and seeking help. So we really do feel like we're able to get a lot of information about what people need and what questions they're asking rather than what we think they need and what we think they should be asking. So the book's organization is a testament to that, I think.
Do you have any forms in the book? Are there any things that can be done through forms?
We do not have forms in the book, but we do have in the reference and the resources section, we do have direction on where you can find any appropriate forms that you may be needing. For instance, you had a question about the POLST form. There is direction in the back of the book for where you can find all those forms.
Wow, this is great. Is there anything else that, any gems that you want to add that would really make this even more interesting and exciting than it seems already?
No, the only thing I will add is that we do hope that both people who are aging themselves or family members will look to the resource and find helpful. I also hope you'll communicate with us if people have suggestions for other things they'd like to see in the book or questions they may have that aren't answered. We'd be happy to entertain those questions. And finally, we have, in addition to the Legal Issues for Older Adults book, We have a whole public education site on our website that I just hope people are aware of. It is a wealth of legal information topics. So everything from information about buying a car to disability to immigration law. So people can feel free to go to the BARS website and to the public information topics there. You'd be surprised how many resources we've gathered on that site, so please feel free to take advantage of that.
Tell us again that address, please.
It's www.osbar.org.
Kateri Walsh, Public Affairs Program Manager, Oregon State Bar Association.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for joining us today. And we also have with us today Janae Haas, principal author of The Legal Guide. Listen to this. Let's talk about powers of attorney and the problems that it can lead to in terms of elderly care.
I'm not sure if listeners understand what a power of attorney is, so maybe we could give a quick definition.
Good. Let's start there.
It is a piece of paper, and it can be any piece of paper, in which you give someone else authority to do something related to your affairs. Under Oregon law, that authority needs to be in writing, it needs to be dated, it needs to be signed by you, and that's it. I will confess this, that I once used the back of a cocktail napkin at an airport bar to create a power of attorney for a friend to manage my bank accounts while I lived overseas for a year. So, powers of attorney are extremely easy in Oregon, and of course, to the extent that they're extremely easy, they also can be too good to be true. There are different kinds of powers of attorney, and those are important to know about. For example, you might be going out of town for a week, you're going to leave your five-year-old with grandma, the child has a dental appointment while you're gone. If grandma shows up at the dentist's office with your child, the dentist is going to say, no, sorry, unless child needs emergency dental work, grandma doesn't have the authority to make that happen. So in that situation, grandma needs a very specific, very limited power of attorney to authorize non-emergency dental work. And the same would be true with medical care. Completely different example, maybe you just broke your leg and you can't drive. You get a check from your insurance company in the mail, and you want your housemate to deposit it in your bank account. You'll need to put in writing that your housemate is acting as your agent under a power of attorney just so he or she can endorse and deposit that check. So, speaking in the most general way, I can say about powers of attorney that when you sign one of these, you are not giving your own right away to do those things. You still retain the right to do those things, and you can cancel the authority that you've given to someone at any time. So you can see how easy that is. The two examples I just gave are for specific and temporary powers.
You don't need a notary public or a witness or anything?
No. And that's, that's what the flip side is. It gets potentially very scary.
So where does this go bad?
Let me give you a little bit of a background for how things go south. You indicated that powers of attorney can sometimes create problems. And in fact, powers of attorney are one of the easiest ways and one of the most common ways that others can use to steal your money and your possessions. There have been cases all over the country, including in Oregon, where evil son or evil companion gets someone to sign a general power of attorney, meaning that you give someone a lot of authority over everything that would be considered one of your assets. And that person uses the person's power to empty out that person's bank account, sell the person's home, pocket the money, of course, and then throw the person out on the street. So they can be a terrific tool for thieves.
And that general power of attorney, is that simply another kind of back-of-the-napkin document that's easy to create?
It certainly could be done the same way. I hereby give so-and-so full authority to deal with all of my income, expenses, and assets. Dated, signed. That can do it.
How does one defend oneself or guard against this kind of thing happening?
I don't think in Oregon we do it very well. In every state, a person has to be legally competent in order to sign over power to somebody else. And when you think about legally competent, you think about, well, am I competent to get married? Am I competent to sign a contract? Legally competent in the context of power of attorney is pretty squishy. It means that at the very least, the person understands what the effect of a power of attorney is. That is, the person knows that someone else can make decisions for him or her. So far, so good. Once you become legally incompetent, you can't sign over your authority like that. However, there's nobody out there checking to see if you are legally competent when you sign one of these things. There's nobody there other than the person who's signing and the person who's eagerly waiting for the person to sign to verify if that person is legally competent, to verify if the person has been threatened or intimidated or, more commonly, lied to about the need to sign the document. And there's not even anyone out there to confirm whether the signature on the document is, in fact, signed by somebody else. It could have been a forgery.
I would think there'd be a lot of forgeries in this kind of thing.
There are. The process of creating a power of attorney in Oregon is extremely loosey-goosey. The problems that I've mentioned are ones that to some extent can be minimized, and you mentioned one of those things, and that is that there's no notary involved in Oregon. In a number of states, having a person notarize a power of attorney is mandatory. And Oregon law doesn't require that. There's no special form for a power of attorney that would include an explanation of how much power the person is sharing with his or her agent, and that's what you would call the person who gets that power, and no explanation or no warning to the person who's signing over that somebody could misuse that power.
And no witness. Is anyone working to correct this situation here in Oregon, Janae?
I'm not sure what is going on right this minute. I can give you some history, though. About 15 years ago, powers of attorney were getting a lot of attention for being a tool for abuse. And at that point, a group made up of the banking community, the State Attorney General's Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, the Oregon State Bar, the Oregon Unit on Aging, and Oregon's Adult Protective Services Office gathered to consider the problem of financial abuse using powers of attorney. We looked at some model forms created by the Unit on Aging that were extremely simple, easy to read, included a warning, required a notary to review the signature, sniff out anything that looks suspicious. We also looked at a model form that was proposed by a national organization of lawyers for powers of attorney. The banking community liked this form because it thought of everything. Unfortunately, the form was 32 pages of check the box, and it was written in legalese. The rest of us quickly concluded that the so-called model form, although it was perfect in terms of anticipating every possible need under a power of attorney, really didn't do anything to protect the rights of vulnerable adults against exploitation. So nothing in Oregon law happened after that for another 6 years. finally, 9 years ago, Oregon law changed slightly. Before then, the law didn't even have a presumption that the agency who got the power had to use it for the benefit of the person who gave him that power. If someone signed over power, the agent who received it could use all the assets of that person for a trip to Tahiti with his boyfriend. Now the law says that a power can be used to enrich someone else only if the person who signs it says that's okay. That is a good start, but it's also pretty easy to get around. If you can imagine someone who is simply asking an adult child, for example, to take over management of expenses and bills, bank accounts, the person is not likely to know that an extra provision that says, oh, I can use this to take care of my own affairs too, is going to allow the agent to take every nickel.
Why isn't the legislature on top of this? Why aren't they simply ready to create requirements for notary and witness?
The legislature waits to hear from constituents. And it's obvious that in 2009, constituents stepped forward. But certainly at the time that those of us with different kinds of interests were meeting, we simply could not come to agreement on what should be taken to the legislature. We even got the national AARP group involved, and those of us who were concerned about the welfare of vulnerable elders expected AARP to jump on board. It didn't. It wanted the process to be as simple and easy and cheap as possible for younger elders, if you want to say that, to help their older elders deal with their financial situations.
What's an old person to do? How do we protect ourselves?
I would say several things, and I'm not sure how valuable these are going to be in real life. One is, don't sign stuff you haven't read. Two, don't sign stuff you have read if you don't understand it. Three might be, don't believe what someone tells you it means if the person who's trying to get you to sign the document is the one to whom you would be giving power. And finally, I would say getting legal help for a power of attorney is really, really easy. Anyone who goes through the Oregon Lawyer Referral Service can have a power of attorney created or reviewed for $35 or less simply by going through the Oregon State Bar's Lawyer Referral Service. And obviously, spending $35 today is a lot better than having your son throw you out on the street after you've signed such a document.
So get a third party involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Janae, that's an awesome commentary and an important subject. I'm amazed that this situation could exist here, and I don't know what to say. In the next episode, we'll be talking with Barbara Bernstein and Joanne Harrigel of Elders in Action. This organization offers help in many types of situations, as well as opportunities to volunteer to help others. Don't miss it. You've been listening to our series on aging in Portland, retired or rewired. You can listen to any episode in this series or the entire series if you go to kboo.fm and look for the show under my name, Tom Flynn. Thanks for joining us today.